In a world addicted to noise, silence becomes a form of rebellion. Everyone wants to be heard, to speak first, to have the final word. But the Stoic asks a different question. What if power isn't in saying more, but in observing more? What if wisdom lives not in what we say, but in what we notice when we choose not to speak? We've been conditioned to equate presence with volume. But true presence doesn't need to announce itself. It watches, it listens, it discerns. And that's where real clarity begins, when you stop trying to dominate the room and start trying to understand it. This episode isn't about becoming passive. It's about becoming precise. It's about recognizing the strength in restraint, the sharpness in silence, and the mastery that comes when you learn to observe more and speak only when it truly matters. 1. Listening builds wisdom. Most people think wisdom comes from experience, and while that's partly true, it's only part of the equation. The Stoics understood that wisdom isn't just about what happens to you, it's about what you notice when it does. And the key to noticing, to understanding, to seeing beneath the surface, is listening. But not the kind of listening we're used to. Not listening to reply, not listening to defend, not listening to appear smart or polite, real listening, the kind that requires silence, the kind that suspends ego, the kind that makes room for something deeper than opinion, truth. When you truly listen, something powerful happens. You begin to learn, not just facts, but people. You pick up on tone, on hesitation, on what wasn't said. You start to see patterns in behavior, gaps in logic, signals of pain or fear or joy. You move beyond words and into meaning. And that's where wisdom lives, in that subtle space most people miss because they're too busy waiting to speak. Seneca once wrote, "It is better to be silent than to speak foolishly." And yet today, silence feels like weakness. People rush to fill space with noise, to seem certain, to stay relevant, to dominate the room. But in doing so, they forfeit one of the most powerful tools of the Stoic mind, observation through stillness. Wisdom isn't found in volume, it's revealed in depth. And depth comes from attention. The better you listen, the more life reveals itself to you. The better you listen, the more others feel seen. And when people feel seen, they show you who they really are. And when you see clearly, you act wisely. Think about the last time you truly felt heard by someone. Not just nodded at, not just given advice, but heard. It probably wasn't about what they said. It was about the space they gave you, the patience, the presence. That's the power of listening. It gives space for truth to emerge, not just in others, but in yourself. Listening also teaches humility, because to listen is to accept. I don't know everything. I might be wrong. This moment is bigger than my opinion, and that humility is the doorway to growth. It's what separates reaction from reflection. It's what allows you to change without shame, to learn without ego. And here's the irony. The better you listen, the more valuable your words become. Because they're not reactive, they're intentional. They come from understanding, not impulse, from awareness, not assumption. And people can feel that. They trust a voice that comes from stillness more than one that comes from noise. So start small. The next time you're in a conversation, pause before you speak. Resist the urge to correct, to prove, to one-up. Just listen, really listen. Watch what changes. You might hear something you've never heard before, not in the other person, but in yourself. Because listening builds more than just knowledge. It builds patience, clarity, compassion, and ultimately, it builds wisdom. Not the kind that shouts, the kind that shapes lives, 2. Haste in speech weakens clarity. There's a kind of urgency in the way people speak today. A rush to be heard, a panic to respond, a fear that if we don't say something immediately, we'll lose our place in the conversation, or worse, look unsure. But in that hurry, something essential gets lost. Clarity. When you speak too soon, you often speak from the surface. Reaction, not reflection. And reaction is rarely wise. It's often defensive, incomplete, emotionally charged. The Stoics warned against this. They saw impulse not as a sign of strength, but of undisciplined thought. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "If you are disturbed by external things, it is not they that trouble you, but your own judgment of them, and it is in your power to wipe out that judgment now." The same applies to speech. It's not what was said that hurts. It's how quickly we react without thinking clearly. Think of a time you regretted something you said. Was it because the words were cruel or because they weren't clear? Often, it's both. Haste leads to sloppiness, and sloppiness leads to misunderstanding. You might have meant one thing, but your tone, timing, or choice of words said another. And once those words leave your mouth, they can't be unsaid. You can apologize, you can explain, but you can't rewind. The Stoic path is not about suppressing your voice, it's about sharpening it. It's about understanding that speech is not a right, it's a responsibility. Every word has weight. Every sentence has ripple effects. And if your words are a reflection of your mind, then clarity in speech begins with clarity in thought. That's why the Stoic pauses. Not to avoid conflict, but to understand it. Not to appear calm, but to cultivate real calmness. Not to manipulate, but to clarify. Because words spoken in haste often come from wounds, not wisdom, from the ego, not the essence. When you slow down your speech, something surprising happens. Your mind slows down too. You become more aware of what you're actually thinking. You notice your emotions before they hijack your message. You begin to speak with intention, not just instinct. And in doing so, you earn not just attention, but respect. People can feel rushed energy. They can sense when someone is speaking just to speak, just to be right, or just to win. But when you speak slowly, purposefully, and precisely, they listen differently. They lean in. Because in a world full of noise, clarity stands out. And let's be honest, most conversations don't need an immediate answer. They need a thoughtful one. The world doesn't need more opinions. It needs more understanding. So if that means pausing before you speak, pause. If that means taking a breath, do it. If that means saying, "Let me think about that," say it. There's power in restraint. There's clarity in delay. Speaking clearly isn't about having the perfect vocabulary. It's about choosing the right moment. It's about aligning your voice with your values. It's about making sure that when you speak, your words don't just fill space. They mean something. So the next time you feel the pressure to respond fast, ask yourself, am I speaking to express or to impress? Am I clear in my mind or just afraid of silence? Let the answer guide you, because in a life of meaning, clarity always outweighs speed. 3. Observe before reacting. Most of our mistakes in life don't come from what we know, but from how quickly we react to what we think we know. The Stoics understood this truth intimately. They taught that between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space lies our power. The power to pause, to observe, and to choose our response with wisdom instead of impulse. But in modern life, that space is shrinking. We're conditioned to respond instantly. to emails, to comments, to criticism, to anything that challenges our sense of control. And because of that, we lose our ability to see things as they really are. We don't respond to reality. We respond to our first impression of it. And that is almost always incomplete. To observe before reacting is not about passivity. It's about power, real power. Because when you observe, truly observe, you collect more data. You see not just the action, but the intention. Not just the words, but the emotional weight behind them. You begin to ask better questions. Why did this happen? What am I assuming? What else might be going on? That inquiry, that patience, is the birthplace of wise action. Epictetus put it simply, "It's not what happens to you, but how you react to it that matters." But what most people forget is this: your reaction is not automatic, it's chosen. And you can't choose wisely if you're not observing deeply. If you skip over that moment of awareness, you skip over your freedom. Let's be honest, how many conflicts in your life could have been avoided if you had paused just 5 seconds longer? How many texts or emails were sent in frustration only to be regretted moments later? How many times did you misread a situation because you didn't wait long enough to see it fully? Observation slows the spiral. It protects you from the traps of assumption and projection. It helps you separate what is from what you feel. That doesn't mean you suppress your emotions. It means you let them breathe before they speak. You let them settle before they act. That's emotional discipline. Not the absence of feeling, but the management of it. And the beauty is, observation sharpens with practice. It starts with small habits, pausing before replying, asking questions instead of giving answers, watching your thoughts before voicing them. In every situation, you begin to look beneath the surface. You train yourself to see the truth, not just the trigger. This doesn't just change how you respond to others. It changes how you relate to yourself. When you begin to observe your own thoughts without judgment, you realize how many of them are echoes, not truths. You begin to create space inside, not just outside, and that space becomes peace. Because reacting is easy, it's automatic, it makes you feel in control for a moment. But that control is fragile. True control, stoic control, comes from observation, from understanding, from stepping back far enough to see the full picture before you step forward to act. So the next time you feel that spark of anger, of fear, of defensiveness, don't extinguish it. Observe it. Ask it why it's there. Give it a name, and only then decide what to do with it. Because in that pause, in that breath between stimulus and response, you're not just managing your emotions, you're mastering your life. 4. Silence reveals what noise hides. We live in a world saturated with sound, notifications, conversations, headlines, opinions. Every second is filled with something demanding our attention. And in that endless stream of noise, it's easy to mistake volume for truth, urgency for importance, and movement for meaning. But the Stoics knew better. They knew that some of the most important realizations in life can only be heard in silence. Silence isn't emptiness, it's space. A space where thought settles, emotion softens, and clarity rises to the surface. And most importantly, it's where you begin to hear yourself. Not the version of you shaped by others' expectations or molded by fear or pressure, but the part of you that simply is, unfiltered, honest, awake. Noise is often a disguise. People talk to fill gaps they're afraid to feel. They argue not to understand, but to protect their egos. They distract themselves with endless information so they don't have to sit with the discomfort of their own inner confusion. But silence strips all of that away. It removes the mask. It reveals what's really there. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "Nowhere can man find a quieter or more untroubled retreat than in his own soul. That retreat, your inner stillness, is not just a luxury, it's a necessity, because without silence you don't reflect, and without reflection you don't grow, you just repeat. Think of the last time you were alone in true quiet, no phone, no music, no conversation, just stillness. Maybe it was uncomfortable, maybe it felt strange, but maybe, just maybe, you noticed something, a feeling that had been buried, a thought that kept trying to speak but couldn't be heard over the noise, a truth you've been avoiding. That's the power of silence. It gives space for what's essential, it teaches patience, it cultivates awareness, and it does something that very few things in this world can do. It puts you face to face with your own mind. And while that might be frightening at first, it's also freeing. Because only when you truly hear your own voice can you begin to live from it. And silence isn't just a tool for self-awareness, it's a weapon against manipulation. When others try to provoke you, rush you, overwhelm you with words, your silence becomes strength. It confuses those who expect you to react. It disarms those who rely on chaos to control. It shows that you're not governed by noise, but by inner order. There's also a kind of wisdom that only silence can access. When you listen in quiet, you don't just hear words, you feel what's behind them. You begin to sense intentions, insecurities, inconsistencies. You read between the lines. You pick up on what's not being said, and that often matters more than what is. And in that stillness, you also begin to hear the world differently. Nature sounds clearer. Time slows down. Small details become vivid. The colors of life return, not the artificial hues of stimulation, but the grounded tones of presence. That's where gratitude lives. That's where peace hides. In the simple things we're usually too distracted to notice. So don't fear silence. Don't rush to fill it. Enter it like a sacred room. Let it hold your questions. Let it clear your mind. Let it remind you that you don't need to speak to be powerful or respond to be aware. Sometimes your greatest insight will come not when you speak, but when you simply listen to the quiet between thoughts. Because in the end, silence doesn't take anything from you. It gives you back everything that noise has buried. 5. Learn more by talking less. It's a strange paradox of human nature. The more we speak, the less we tend to understand. And the less we speak, the more we begin to notice, absorb, and ultimately grow. Talking often feels like progress. It gives us the illusion of control, of intelligence, of presence. But in many cases, it's the very thing that blocks us from learning something new. Because when you're speaking, you're repeating what you already know. But when you're listening, you're opening yourself to something you don't. The Stoics understood this deeply. They believed that wisdom isn't just about what you know. It's about how you relate to knowledge. It's about humility. And humility begins with restraint. When you talk less, you begin to hear more, not just what others say, but how they say it, their tone, their intent, their uncertainty, their hidden truths. You learn to read the world with more precision because your energy is no longer focused on projecting, but perceiving. Socrates, though not a Stoic, modeled this beautifully. He didn't speak to impress. He questioned to understand. He asked, listened, probed, and challenged, not with the arrogance of one who knows everything, but with the curiosity of one who seeks truth. That's the mindset the Stoic cultivates, not one who must speak, but one who chooses to learn. In practical terms, talking less doesn't mean muting yourself or becoming passive. It means becoming intentional, It means asking more questions than giving answers. It means resisting the urge to dominate a conversation just to feel significant. It means allowing silence to be part of the dialogue rather than something to avoid. And perhaps most importantly, it means recognizing that your voice is not your only tool for connection. Your presence is. So many people talk just to fill space, to avoid discomfort, to prove value, but that constant output leaves little room for input. And without input, there's no growth. Learning requires room. Room for reflection. Room for challenge. Room for rethinking what you thought you already understood. If you're always speaking, there's no room left for any of that. There's also a social power in restraint. People remember the one who speaks with intention, the one who listens deeply and responds when it actually matters. That person gains trust. That person carries weight. Because when you talk less, your words carry more value. You become the kind of person others listen to, not because you're loud, but because your silence means you've actually been paying attention. In relationships, this principle is even more powerful. Talking less allows you to listen without defensiveness. It opens the door to deeper empathy. You start hearing what's behind the words. You understand people not just through their logic, but through their experience. That insight can't be faked. It can't be rushed. It can only be earned through stillness, presence, and quiet observation. And on a personal level, talking less trains the mind. It forces you to process your own thoughts before releasing them. It teaches discipline over impulsiveness. It invites clarity. It helps you see when your words come from truth and when they're just echoes of emotion or ego. And once you can tell the difference, your speech becomes a tool for connection, not confusion. So ask yourself, are you speaking to add value or just to fill space? Are you truly listening or just waiting for your turn to reply? Are you giving yourself the chance to learn, not just from books or mentors, but from the very people you engage with every day? Talking less isn't about being quiet. It's about being wise. It's about stepping back so insight can step in. Because sometimes the most intelligent person in the room isn't the one doing the most talking. It's the one doing the most listening. 6. Notice patterns, not words. Most people hear what's being said. The Stoic listens to what's being repeated. Because wisdom doesn't lie in isolated statements. It lives in the patterns behind them. What people do consistently, how they behave over time, the choices they make under pressure. These are the true indicators of who they are and of what the world is trying to teach you. Words are cheap. They're easy to manipulate, easy to dress up, easy to say with little intention behind them. But behavior, that's harder to fake. Repeated behavior over time becomes a map, one that reveals character, values, wounds, and truths far more accurately than even the most eloquent speech. The Stoic isn't impressed by charm or performance. He observes patterns. He notices when someone promises much but delivers little, when someone talks of peace but lives in chaos, when someone says they value discipline but breaks their own rules the moment temptation whispers. He doesn't rush to judgment, but he doesn't ignore repetition either, because repetition reveals essence. And this isn't just about people, it's about yourself. Your thoughts have patterns, your emotions have rhythms, your fears don't just appear. They repeat themselves in specific contexts, trying to tell you something, but if you're only focused on the words in your mind, the dramatic narrative, the excuses, the justifications, you'll miss the deeper messages. You won't see the cycles that are keeping you stuck. Seneca wrote, "To be everywhere is to be nowhere." The same can be said of attention. If you're distracted by every word, every headline, every emotional impulse, you're nowhere near clarity. But when you slow down and begin to observe the patterns, you start to reclaim your perception. You begin to detect what's consistent, not just what's loud. Think about your life for a moment. What have you complained about more than once? What situations trigger you again and again? What habits keep showing up despite your best intentions? These are not coincidences. These are signals. The Stoic doesn't ignore signals. He studies them, because within them lies the path to change. This mindset also applies to progress. Motivation comes and goes. But habits? Habits tell the truth. The person who works quietly, shows up daily, improves gradually. They don't need to speak of success. Their consistency speaks for them. And if you want to know what matters most to someone, don't ask them. Watch them. Notice where their time goes, where their attention lives. That's the real story. There's a quiet kind of intelligence that develops when you train yourself to see patterns. You no longer get swept away by the emotional highs or crushed by the lows. You understand that both are part of a larger rhythm, and your job is not to react impulsively to each wave, but to learn how to navigate the current beneath them. In this sense, noticing patterns is a form of emotional armor. It protects you from being manipulated by appearances. It shields you from overreacting to moments that don't matter. It allows you to respond with depth, because your understanding is not based on isolated moments. It's based on context. And context is everything. So when someone tells you who they are, listen, yes. But when their actions repeat, believe that more. When your mind repeats a fear, get curious, not reactive. When a situation keeps reappearing in your life, don't call it bad luck. Call it a lesson. Because the Stoic doesn't just observe, he connects the dots. He studies the rhythm beneath the noise. He realizes that truth isn't always loud, but it's always present if you know how to see it. 7. Listening reveals what ego hides. The ego speaks first, loudly, defensively. It doesn't like silence because silence gives space to things the ego would rather ignore. Doubt, vulnerability, contradiction, growth. So it talks, it interrupts, it corrects. It defends its position like a fortress, afraid that listening too deeply might dismantle the illusion of certainty it clings to. But the Stoic knows, if you never listen, you never grow. Because listening requires humility. It requires the courage to admit that you might not be right, that someone else might see something you can't, that truth doesn't always echo your own voice. When you truly listen, not just nod politely or wait for your turn to speak, you begin to hear beyond words. You hear intentions, you hear pain, you hear pride trying to protect itself, and perhaps most importantly, you hear your own reactions more clearly. You notice when your ego gets tight, when it wants to defend, when it starts building arguments while the other person is still speaking. This awareness is powerful. It gives you the ability to pause, to ask, "What am I protecting right now? What am I afraid of hearing?" And often what you'll find is that the ego doesn't fear being wrong. It fears losing control. But that fear, if left unexamined, becomes a wall between you and growth. Listening softens that wall. It turns confrontation into curiosity. It turns arguments into learning. It doesn't mean you agree with everything. It means you give space for understanding to emerge. And that space? That's where wisdom lives. That's where emotional maturity begins. Think of how many misunderstandings in life happen because people stop listening. They assume, they react, they interrupt. They hear what confirms their bias and discard the rest. But when you remove ego from the equation, you listen with a different ear. You ask different questions. You seek not just to win, but to connect. The Stoics practiced this deliberately. They trained themselves to listen without becoming emotionally entangled, to observe their own reactions without feeding them, to hear what others were truly saying, even when it was hidden behind emotion, sarcasm, or silence. Because often, the most important things aren't said directly. They're hinted at, they're felt, and only those who are listening with clarity, not with ego, can pick them up. And it's not just about listening to others, it's about listening to yourself. How often do we silence the parts of ourselves that speak uncomfortable truths? The part that says, "You're not acting from your values right now." Or, "This path isn't making you proud." The ego rushes in to justify, to explain away, to distract. But the quiet inner voice, the one that doesn't shout, the one that waits, that's the one you need to hear. To live with integrity, you must listen to the voice that the ego tries to suppress. The voice of conscience, of clarity, of deep, unfiltered awareness. And the only way to hear it is to get quiet, to make room for it, to allow truth to surface without immediately trying to reshape it into something more comfortable. Because here's the truth. The ego wants comfort. Growth requires discomfort. And listening, true listening, is the bridge between the two. It invites you to move from certainty to curiosity, from pride to openness, from illusion to insight. So when you feel the urge to interrupt, to defend, to prove, pause, take a breath, and listen, not just to the other person, but to your own resistance, to what's underneath your reaction. Because the Stoic doesn't just listen to win arguments. He listens to dissolve illusions. He listens to expose the truth the ego is trying to hide. And in doing so, he doesn't lose strength. He gains it. 8. The observer sees the truth beneath the mask. Most people interact with masks, not with people. We wear them, project them, polish them. We say what's expected, perform roles, manage impressions. But beneath every social gesture, behind every carefully crafted sentence, there is something more real, something the eye that merely looks will miss, but the eye that observes will catch. The Stoic doesn't just see what's on the surface. He trains his perception to go deeper, to read between expressions, to hear the tremor behind the tone, to sense what someone is avoiding more than what they're saying. Because the truth often doesn't shout. It hides in hesitation. It lives in patterns, in silences, in contradictions between word and action. Every day we're surrounded by signals, some sincere, some crafted to protect ego, image, or insecurity. People wear confidence like armor, humor like distraction, busyness like proof of worth. But none of these are the full story. The observer, the one who watches without judgment, without needing to fix or control, begins to see through it all. He doesn't call it out. He just understands. And that understanding is power. Because when you stop reacting to the surface, you become unshakable. You're no longer fooled by the angry person whose rage is just hurt in disguise. You're not manipulated by praise that masks control. You don't fall for charm that lacks consistency. You've trained your mind to see through the veil. This doesn't mean becoming cynical. It means becoming clear. The Stoic observes not to accuse, but to understand, to navigate life with more precision and less confusion, to move through a world of noise without becoming lost in it. Because once you understand what people hide and why, they no longer confuse you. You see them for what they are, human, struggling, layered, complex. But this skill is not just for reading others, it's for reading yourself. How many masks do you wear out of habit? How often do you say, "I'm fine," when you're not? How often do you play strong when what you really need is rest. The Stoic peels back these layers gently, but honestly, because he knows that the mask may impress the world, but it will always weigh heavy on the soul. True strength doesn't come from the performance. It comes from the clarity that arises when performance is no longer necessary. When you observe yourself long enough to recognize your own defense mechanisms and release them. When you allow truth to exist without shame, even if it's messy, even if it's vulnerable. In a world obsessed with appearances, the observer becomes rare and valuable. He isn't rushing to be seen, he's seeking to see. And because he's not chasing attention, his attention becomes sharper, more precise. He catches what others miss. He makes decisions that are rooted in reality, not in illusion. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "If someone is able to show me that what I think or do is not right, I will happily change, for I seek the truth by which no one was ever truly harmed." That's the mindset of the observer. Not defensive, not reactive, but devoted to reality, to truth beneath the mask. So whether you're in conversation, in conflict, or in silence with yourself, ask, what's really going on here? What's not being said? What's being repeated that I haven't noticed? What's the mask and what's behind it? Because when you learn to observe without needing to judge, fix, or protect, you gain something rare, clarity. And with clarity comes freedom, the freedom to live, to love, to choose, not based on the performance of others or yourself, but on what is real. 9. Contain your words, expand your vision. We've been taught that speaking is power, that to lead, we must speak up, that to be heard, we must always have something to say. But the Stoic flips that completely. He knows that containing your words is what creates the space for true perception. Not everything you feel needs to be said. Not every opinion deserves oxygen. Sometimes the most powerful move isn't expression, it's restraint. When you choose silence over reaction, you create space between stimulus and response. That space is where clarity grows. Most people operate on impulse. They feel something, they say it. But emotion and wisdom don't always align. If you speak from the emotion before you've understood the cause, you risk misrepresenting not just yourself, but the truth of the moment. To contain your words is not to suppress your truth, it's to refine it. It's to give your thoughts the time they deserve before turning them into action. When you stop pouring out every reaction, you begin to observe the world more fully. Your mind becomes less busy with the need to be right, to be seen, to be validated. And as your words become fewer, your attention becomes sharper. You begin to notice what others miss. This is how vision expands, not by adding noise, but by removing distraction. When your mouth is still, your mind can listen, not just to others, but to the world itself. You start to see the subtle patterns in people's behavior, the emotional undercurrents beneath the surface of conversations, the invisible forces that shape outcomes, and most importantly, you start to see yourself more clearly. The Stoics understood this. Epictetus said, "We have two ears and one mouth so that we can listen twice as much as we speak." He wasn't being poetic, he was being precise. There is a wisdom that lives in observation, a wisdom you forfeit the moment you rush to speak. Every time you hold your tongue, you make room for the full picture to reveal itself. But let's be honest, this isn't easy. In a world where everyone is broadcasting, being silent can feel like being invisible. And yet, the people who speak least often carry the most weight when they do. Why? Because they've trained themselves not to speak from ego. They speak from substance. And when substance speaks, people listen. Restraint builds credibility. It sharpens your presence. It tells the world, I don't need to prove anything. I understand more than I say. That kind of energy is rare, and it's powerful. It creates gravity. Because in a room full of noise, silence becomes a signal. When you're not trying to dominate the conversation, you're free to truly understand it. And when you understand, you can move with precision, not performance. Containing your words doesn't mean becoming passive or weak. It means you value depth over display, that your words, when spoken, carry weight because they've passed through the filter of thought, awareness, and intention. That you've chosen to speak not to be heard, but to serve clarity. And here's the paradox. The less you speak, the more your words matter. The less you react, the more your presence commands. The less you interrupt, the more you perceive. You expand your vision not by adding more to your view, but by removing what clouds it. And often, that cloud is our own voice. So practice it. In moments of tension, pause. In moments of pressure, breathe. In moments where ego wants to be loud, choose to observe instead. Ask yourself, do I need to say this, or do I just want to be seen? Is this truth or impulse? Is my silence weakness, or is it strength holding its form? Because the Stoic isn't silent because he lacks words. He's silent because his wisdom has taught him, only speak when it adds value, only speak when the words match the depth of your vision. Until then, observe, learn, grow, and let the silence sharpen your sight. 10. Speech is silver, observation is gold. There's a reason why the ancients placed such value on silence. Words can inform, they can inspire, they can heal, but they can also deceive, they can distract, distort, and disguise. Speech, when unexamined, becomes noise. But observation, pure, undiluted awareness, reveals what no sentence ever can. Speech is silver. It shines, it attracts attention, it feels valuable, but it's only as honest as the mind that produces it. Observation, on the other hand, doesn't try to shine. It doesn't announce itself. It simply sees. And in that seeing, it unlocks truth, the kind that can't be debated, the kind that lives beneath appearances, beneath pretense, beneath ego. To observe is to pay attention, not just with your eyes, but with your presence. It's the art of noticing what others overlook. A shift in tone, a crack in confidence, a pattern of avoidance. It's sensing what isn't being said, what's hidden between the lines. It's listening not to respond, but to understand. And most people don't do this, not because they can't, but because they don't train for it. They've spent their lives preparing to speak, to argue, to be heard. But very few train themselves to see without judgment, to witness without interference. That's why observation is gold, because it's rare, because it's honest, because it teaches you things no conversation ever will. The Stoic lives in that space. He knows that wisdom isn't found in what you say, it's found in what you realize before speaking. He knows that talk is easy, but perception requires discipline, and so he watches, not passively, but attentively. He listens, not to collect ammunition for his response, but to grasp the full reality of what's in front of him. In a world obsessed with opinion, the observer remains grounded in reality. While others react, he reflects. While others rush to conclusions, he remains curious. While others try to dominate, he seeks to understand. This makes him powerful, not because of what he says, but because of what he sees. This kind of awareness changes everything. It changes how you interpret conflict. It changes how you navigate relationships. It even changes how you understand yourself. Because when you become skilled in observation, you begin to catch your own behaviors before they take over. You notice your tone shifting before the argument starts. You catch the story your ego is spinning before it becomes a belief. You become not just a participant in life, but a conscious architect of your experience. But make no mistake, observation is not passive. It's not detached indifference. It's active clarity. It's precision. It's the discipline to wait, to watch, to withhold judgment until truth reveals itself. It's asking, what's really happening here? What's being hidden by emotion? What's the deeper motive? And what does my own reaction reveal about me? This is the true art of Stoicism. Not preaching values, but perceiving reality. Not winning debates, but seeing clearly. Because only through observation can you understand where your control ends and where acceptance must begin. Only through observation can you act from wisdom, not reactivity. So yes, speech is silver, but only when it's shaped by the gold of awareness. Speak when your words are anchored in truth. Speak when they contribute to clarity. Speak when silence has already done its work. And when in doubt, observe. Because what you see clearly will guide you better than anything you say impulsively. And that clarity, that inner stillness that sees the world for what it is, that is gold the world cannot corrupt. So what do we really gain when we stop speaking and start observing? We gain access to a different kind of wisdom, one that doesn't come from books or speeches, but from presence, from being fully here. Because when you stop trying to control the narrative, when you no longer need to impress, defend, or explain, you create the space where insight can emerge. This entire journey, every principle we've explored in this episode, is a quiet rebellion against modern chaos. You don't need to raise your voice to raise your standard. You don't need to dominate to lead. You don't need to have all the answers to be deeply grounded in truth. All you need is the discipline to pause, to listen, to see clearly before acting. The Stoics didn't seek power through persuasion. They earned respect through presence. Their lives were their argument. Their restraint was their force. And in a world that's constantly shouting for attention, their silence became a kind of thunder. You can live that way too. You can be the calm in the room, the one who doesn't need to prove, the one who sees before speaking, the one who waits for clarity instead of rushing toward noise. It doesn't mean you'll be perfect. It means you'll be powerful where it counts, in your awareness, in your decisions, in your peace. So take this practice with you. In your conversations, pause before reacting. In your relationships, listen beyond words. In your own mind, learn to observe the thoughts before you become them. And when you feel the urge to speak just to fill the silence, don't. Let the silence say something stronger. Because in the end, your greatest influence won't come from how loud you speak, but from how deeply you understand. We live in a world obsessed with what's missing, what we haven't achieved, what we don't own, what someone else has that we don't. And so we wake up every day with a quiet hunger for more, for better, for different. But there's a question we rarely ask. What if the real power isn't in the next goal, but in how we see what's already here? Gratitude isn't just a warm emotion. It's not a fleeting feeling that comes and goes when life feels convenient. It's a discipline, a practice, a way of training the mind to recognize value in the ordinary, to see blessings in what others overlook, and to build strength, not by having more, but by appreciating deeply what already exists. Stoicism teaches us this, that happiness doesn't come from acquiring, it comes from adjusting, from reframing, from realizing that the most powerful person isn't the one who has everything, but the one who needs very little and sees abundance where others see lack. In this episode, we're not going to talk about gratitude as a cliché. We're going to reframe it as a mental practice, a daily workout for the soul. Because when you master the art of seeing clearly, you no longer chase meaning. You live it. Let's explore what it means to be truly grateful, not passively, but with intention. Not because life is perfect, but because your perspective is strong. 1. Gratitude must be trained daily. Gratitude is not something you wait for. It's something you practice, deliberately, consistently, and especially when it feels most unnatural. It's not a reaction to comfort. It's a muscle of perception, and like any muscle, it withers without use. Most people treat gratitude like a guest. They wait for it to arrive. But the Stoic treats it like a discipline, like breath, like focus. It is summoned, trained, repeated. The modern world doesn't make this easy. Everything around you is designed to make you feel like something is missing, that you're not enough, that you're behind, that your life should look like someone else's. Social media doesn't show you what to appreciate, it shows you what to chase. Advertising doesn't ask you to be grateful, it asks you to crave. And slowly, without noticing, your mind begins to measure worth not by what you have, but by what you lack. That's why gratitude must be intentional. It must be exercised every single day, before the news scroll, before the calendar fills, before the weight of expectation sets in. Because if you don't anchor your mind in what is, the world will train it to obsess over what isn't. Gratitude isn't about pretending everything is good. It's about seeing what is good despite the chaos. It's about stepping into your day with a mindset that says, I don't need everything to be perfect to see value in this moment. That's strength. That's clarity. That's freedom. The Stoics knew this. Marcus Aurelius wrote not to praise the world, but to remind himself of what he still had control over. Epictetus, who had lost his freedom, still found space to say thank you for life itself. They didn't wait for ideal conditions. They trained gratitude like they trained their judgment, their discipline, their thoughts. And you can do the same. You can start by naming 3 things every morning, not for social media, not for others, but for your own mind. And don't just name obvious things. Go small. Be specific. Say, I'm grateful for the quiet in the morning before anyone wakes up. Or, I'm grateful for the strength to face today, even if I'm tired. That kind of gratitude rewires how you see the world. Because what you repeat, you remember. And what you remember, you reinforce. If you begin each day with a ritual of appreciation, even for 5 seconds, you're teaching your brain to focus on sufficiency, not scarcity, on meaning, not lack, on now, not later. Think about how different your day becomes when you train your mind this way. Stress doesn't disappear, but it doesn't dominate you. Problems still arise, but they don't blind you to what's still working. Even in hard seasons, you find fragments of beauty because you trained your mind to look for them. And when you miss a day, don't guilt yourself, start again. That's the beauty of daily practice. It doesn't demand perfection. It just demands that you return, that you choose to begin again and again. Because every time you do, you're reclaiming your attention from the chaos. You're choosing to center your awareness not on what the world wants from you, but on what you already possess. So don't wait to feel grateful. Practice it, train it, carve it into your routine like breath, like stillness, like resilience. Because it's not a luxury, it's a necessity. In a world built to distract you from everything that matters, the practice of gratitude becomes your compass back to yourself. And once you master that discipline, you'll realize life didn't need to change for you to feel rich. You just needed to learn how to see it. 2. It reframes every moment. Gratitude is not just about feeling better. It's about seeing differently. It's not a decoration we add to the surface of life. It's a lens through which the entire picture changes. One shift in perception, and the same moment can turn from burden to blessing, from stress to strength, from routine to reverence. When you live without gratitude, every small inconvenience becomes magnified. A delay feels like sabotage. A mistake feels like failure. A quiet evening feels like boredom. But when gratitude is present, even quietly, everything softens. The delay becomes time to reflect. The mistake becomes a teacher. The quiet becomes peace. It's not the world that changes. It's your frame. Think about that for a second. How many times have you lived through a moment twice? First, when it happened, and second, when you obsessed over how it should have been different. Gratitude interrupts that cycle. It doesn't remove pain, but it places pain in context. It says, even this has something to offer me. That simple shift doesn't erase hardship, but it makes hardship bearable. It makes growth possible. The Stoics understood this power. They didn't expect life to conform to their desires. They trained their minds to see value in what life offered. Epictetus reminded us, it's not what happens to you, but how you react to it that matters. And gratitude, at its core, is a way of responding to life. A chosen reaction that gives meaning to even the smallest details. Take a simple example. Waking up to another ordinary morning. You can see it as just another repetition, or as one more chance to breathe, to act, to become. One lens sees monotony, the other sees miracle. One leads to restlessness, the other leads to calm. Same moment, different frame. Or imagine facing a difficult conversation. Without gratitude, you may dread it, resist it, carry anxiety all day. But with gratitude, you may say, I'm thankful for the chance to express truth. I'm thankful I care enough to be nervous. I'm thankful I get to practice courage. That shift doesn't make the moment easier, but it gives you strength. It gives the moment meaning. Gratitude trains the eye to scan for what's working, not just what's wrong. And that rewires the nervous system. It settles the breath. It interrupts the spiral of negativity that our minds are so quick to follow. It's a mental habit that transforms the emotional texture of a day. And when that habit becomes your default, you stop living in reaction to what happens and start living in relationship with it. You begin to cooperate with life, not fight it. Even hardship becomes a scene in a bigger story, not the whole narrative. You start to see opportunity inside tension, beauty inside routine, love inside silence. These aren't just poetic ideas, they're neurological truths. The more you frame your moments with appreciation, the more you prime your brain for resilience, presence, and inner stability. Of course, there will be days when the frame slips, when frustration blinds you, when your expectations are louder than your gratitude. That's natural. You're human. But even then, you can pause. You can ask, what else is true here? And often something else is. That breath of awareness is all it takes to shift the scene. This is why gratitude isn't a passive state. It's an active art. And the canvas is your mind. Every thought, every assumption, every judgment, these are brushstrokes. And with each one, you're either painting a world of lack or a world of meaning. Choose carefully, because how you frame the moment becomes how you live the moment. And how you live the moment That's your life. 3. You have more than you recognize. Pause for a second, not to add anything new to your life, but to notice what's already there. The breath in your lungs, the beating of your heart, the roof over your head, the people who still care, even in silence. The chances you've been given again and again to begin, after every failure, every regret, every lost moment. We overlook these things not because they lack value, but because they're consistent. And consistency, in a world obsessed with novelty, becomes invisible. The truth is, you're already surrounded by a kind of quiet abundance, but we've been conditioned to look past it. We've been trained to believe that happiness lives somewhere in the future, tied to a goal, a possession, or a version of ourselves that we haven't yet reached. And in chasing that image, we miss the richness of what's here now. We mistake normal for worthless. But what you call ordinary today, someone else is praying for. The job you complain about, the body you criticize, the friend you take for granted, these are not guaranteed. They never were. Life doesn't owe you another version of the present. It only offers what's here now. And the more you learn to recognize that, the more powerful you become. This isn't about guilt. It's not about comparing your life to someone who has less. That's pity, not gratitude. True gratitude is rooted in awareness, not comparison. It's the realization that value doesn't come from rarity. It comes from meaning. And meaning is something you assign, not something life delivers. The Stoics taught that fortune is always temporary, but character is constant. Epictetus was once a slave, yet he reminded his students that even in bondage, a person could be free, if they recognized the power they still held over their own thoughts, actions, and interpretations. What you have externally can be lost, but what you notice internally, that's yours to keep. So take inventory, not of what's missing, but of what you've been overlooking. Think of the times you survived what you thought you couldn't. Think of the people who forgave you when you didn't deserve it. Think of the parts of yourself that have quietly endured, even when no one else noticed. That strength is not small. That is wealth. Recognizing what you already have doesn't mean you stop striving. It means you stop starving. It means you stop living from a place of lack and start acting from a place of wholeness. When you believe you already have enough to begin, you become less afraid to try. You become less attached to outcome. You become more rooted in reality. And the irony is, that's often when real progress begins. Because when you act from gratitude, not desperation, your decisions are clearer. Your mind is calmer. You're not rushing to fill a void. You're building from a foundation. That difference shows up in every conversation, every task, every intention you carry. So here's the challenge. Today, before you make another plan, before you add another task to your list, pause. Scan your life, not for what's missing, but for what's been quietly supporting you this whole time. Name it. Thank it. Let that awareness become the fuel for whatever comes next. Because until you realize you already have more than you recognize, you'll always live like you're behind, even when you're far ahead. And once you do realize it, you'll carry your life not like a burden to fix, but like a gift to honor. 4. Choose to see blessings, not lack. You always have a choice, not always over events, not always over outcomes, but always over perception. That's where your power begins. In how you see, in what you choose to notice, in which thoughts you allow to become your inner narrative. And one of the most important choices you'll ever make, every day, often every hour, is whether to see what's missing or to see what's present. Most people are conditioned to search for what's wrong. We scan situations, conversations, even ourselves for flaws. It's not because we're negative, it's because the brain was built to protect us. And protection means detecting threats. So unless you retrain that mechanism, you'll wake up every morning with a mind wired for scarcity. You'll notice what didn't go right, what you don't yet have, what others have more of. But you can interrupt that. You can shift the lens. You can train yourself to start from a different question, not what's lacking here, but what can I be thankful for in this exact moment? That's not naive. That's courageous. Because it's easier to complain. It's easier to scroll, compare, and wish your life looked different. It's much harder and more powerful to sit inside your reality and choose to honor what's already working. Choosing to see blessings doesn't mean ignoring hardship. It means refusing to be defined by it. It means letting gratitude be the background of your life, not just a reaction when something goes well. The Stoics didn't practice gratitude because their lives were easy. They practiced it because life was unpredictable, harsh, fragile. That's why they trained the mind to locate meaning, even in difficulty. Seneca said, "A wise person is content with what they have, no matter how little, not because they've given up, but because they understand that peace isn't something the world delivers. It's something the soul decides." That decision, to look with appreciation, gives you leverage over any external circumstance. And it is a decision. In every moment, you're either reinforcing the mindset of lack or strengthening the mindset of sufficiency. The difference between the two doesn't come from what you own. It comes from how you interpret your experience. A walk in silence, a deep breath in a crowded room, a conversation with someone who truly sees you. These are not luxuries, they are gifts, but only if you choose to treat them as such, because the world won't remind you. The noise will always point to what you don't have yet. That's how systems are designed, to keep you chasing. But the Stoic steps out of that cycle. He looks within. He sees value where others see routine. He chooses appreciation over ambition, without giving up the drive to grow. You can do the same. And it starts small, at the red light, in the grocery line, during the moment of silence before sleep. Ask yourself, what am I overlooking right now that's actually good? That question is not just reflective, it's transformative. Because what you focus on expands. And if you consistently focus on what's good, what's meaningful, what's working, then you begin to feel like life itself is on your side. That's not fantasy, that's alignment. That's the emotional byproduct of choosing gratitude again and again, even when lack seems louder. You can always choose to see the lack. It's easy, it's everywhere, but it takes strength to see the blessing, and even more strength to build your mindset around it. Do that, and you won't just change how you feel, you'll change how you live. 5. Gratitude amplifies resilience. Resilience isn't just about pushing through difficulty. It's not merely endurance or a stubborn refusal to break. True resilience is deeper. It's the quiet strength that comes from meaning, and gratitude is what gives that meaning its shape. Without it, resilience becomes rigid, dry, mechanical. But when gratitude is present, even your hardest moments become part of something purposeful. You're not just surviving, you're evolving. Most people think of resilience as a reaction. You get hit, you recover. But the Stoics saw it as preparation. They trained themselves not just to endure what might come, but to embrace it as fuel for their inner development. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way." But that's not just Stoic strength, that's gratitude in action. It's a mental orientation that looks at adversity and says, There's something here for me. I can grow from this. And that mindset doesn't come from willpower alone. It's built on a foundation of appreciation. Appreciation not just for comfort, but for the challenge itself. Because when you can be grateful during hardship, not just after it's over, you unlock a completely different level of power. You stop asking, "Why is this happening to me?" and start asking, "What is this teaching me?" Gratitude gives hardship direction. It takes pain, confusion, or delay and reframes them as part of your path, not detours from it. You begin to see your scars not as signs of weakness, but as proof that you've healed before, that you've endured worse, that you're stronger than the moment trying to break you. And the science supports this. Studies have shown that people who regularly practice gratitude are more psychologically resilient. They're less likely to burn out, more likely to bounce back from setbacks, and better able to regulate their emotions during high-stress periods. Gratitude, it turns out, isn't just a soft virtue. It's a powerful neurological tool. It helps the brain create narratives of strength, not victimhood. But here's what most people miss. You can't wait for resilience to show up. You have to build it before the storm. That's where daily gratitude comes in. It's your mental strength training. It's what keeps your mindset agile. It reminds you, when difficulty does arrive, that you've already developed the emotional muscles to meet it. Not perfectly, not without struggle, but with awareness, with presence, with purpose. Think of someone you admire for their strength. Chances are they don't just grit their teeth through life. They find meaning in their story. They turn their wounds into wisdom. And if you dig deeper, you'll often find something else behind that strength, a sense of thankfulness, a deep respect for life, even in its rawest form. That's not coincidence. That's conscious cultivation. You can start practicing this right now. The next time something frustrating happens, however small, pause and ask yourself, "Is there something here I can learn to appreciate? Maybe it's the patience you're being forced to develop. Maybe it's the humility. Maybe it's the fact that you even get the chance to struggle through this, that you're alive enough to feel it, aware enough to reflect on it." This isn't about pretending everything is okay. It's about refusing to let hardship make you bitter. Gratitude doesn't eliminate the pain, but it creates space around it, a space wide enough to hold strength, clarity, and hope. And in that space, resilience grows. You can't control everything that happens, but you can control the meaning you assign to it. Gratitude is how you make that meaning powerful. It's how you bend difficulty into depth, how you turn resistance into fuel. And over time, it becomes more than a mindset. It becomes a way of walking through the world. So when life hits hard, and it will, don't just clench your jaw and push through. Breathe, pause, and remember, even here, even now, there's something to be thankful for. Let that guide you forward. 6. Appreciate before achieving. Most people delay gratitude. They tie it to achievement, as if they have to earn the right to be thankful. They'll tell themselves, "I'll feel grateful when I get the promotion, when I buy the house, when I prove them wrong, when I finally become who I want to be." But that mindset creates a dangerous pattern, a life where fulfillment is always postponed, where happiness is always somewhere else. Gratitude doesn't begin at the finish line. It begins now, before the goal is reached, before the milestone is crossed. Because if you can't appreciate your effort before it succeeds, your success will never feel enough. You'll hit one target and immediately move the bar. You'll build achievements on top of emptiness. And eventually, the emptiness wins. The Stoics knew this. They didn't see gratitude as a reward. They saw it as a foundation. Epictetus reminded his students, "He is a wise man who does not grieve for the things which he has not, but rejoices for those which he has." In other words, don't wait for the results to feel thankful. Start with appreciation and let that energy shape the path forward. Appreciation before achievement changes your relationship with effort. Instead of chasing outcomes, you begin to value the process. You begin to see every step, every attempt, every failure, every learning moment as part of something worth honoring. You stop needing to win just to feel worthy. You already feel worthy, and that's what helps you keep going. And here's what's remarkable. This mindset doesn't make you less ambitious. It makes you stronger. Because you're no longer fueled by desperation or fear of inadequacy. You're fueled by something more stable, awareness, gratitude, inner alignment. And those are the qualities that make progress sustainable, that keep you calm when plans fall apart, that keep you grounded when success finally arrives. Look at anyone who has built something real, something meaningful, not just external success, but inner peace. You'll notice a pattern. They didn't wait to be grateful. They practiced it all along the way. They celebrated small wins. They honored effort, even when it wasn't perfect. And because of that, they didn't burn out chasing a finish line. They grew into the kind of person who could carry success without being consumed by it. You can do the same, but it starts by changing what you measure. Instead of only counting results, count effort, count presence. Count the number of times you showed up when it was easier not to. Count how many lessons you've gathered, how many mistakes you've owned, how many quiet victories no one else saw but you did anyway. Gratitude before achievement is the practice of seeing value now, not later. And the more you practice it, the more resilient, creative, and driven you become. Because when you stop tying your self-worth to outcomes, you become free to pursue them from a place of strength, not scarcity. This moment you're in right now, it's already part of your success story. It's not a waiting room. It's not a holding space. It's the real thing. Every step counts. Every setback carries insight. Every bit of effort has worth, even when it feels invisible. So stop delaying gratitude like it's some future reward. Bring it into your process. Let it walk beside your ambition. Let it soften your self-criticism and sharpen your perspective. Because when you learn to appreciate before you achieve, you not only enjoy the journey more, you become someone who's capable of truly holding what they're striving for. 7. It rewires the brain toward optimism. Gratitude isn't just a moral virtue, it's mental training, a daily neurological workout. And just like repeated movements shape the body, repeated thoughts shape the mind. What you focus on, what you return to again and again, literally reshapes your brain. That's not poetic. That's neuroscience. The Stoics may not have had MRIs, but they understood this intuitively. The more you practice a certain way of seeing the world, the more that perspective becomes your default. And in today's world, negativity is the default. News cycles, social media, even casual conversations. It's all optimized to highlight what's wrong, what's missing, what's broken. Your brain is constantly flooded with signals that say, be afraid, be angry, be unsatisfied. And over time, those signals create neural pathways. Automatic responses that shape your mood, your thoughts, even your worldview. Gratitude is the antidote. It interrupts the automatic. It redirects your attention. And when practiced consistently, it literally rewires your mind to see possibility where it used to see problems. That's not a motivational slogan. It's a measurable shift. Studies in neuroplasticity show that people who intentionally reflect on what they're thankful for develop stronger activity in areas of the brain associated with optimism, emotional regulation, and compassion. Think about that for a moment. Gratitude makes you more emotionally agile, less reactive, more resilient under pressure. It creates internal space between stimulus and response. You're no longer a slave to the first emotion that rises. You can pause, reflect, and respond with clarity. That's the real power of optimism. Not blind positivity, but trained perspective. A lens that sees more than just what's wrong. And like any kind of strength, it has to be built. It doesn't come from good intentions. It comes from repetition, from choosing every single day to find at least one thing that's working, one thing that's worth honoring, one thing that reminds you life isn't just chaos. It's also grace, timing, and quiet gifts that often go unnoticed. This is why gratitude is so central to Stoic thought. Not because it makes you feel good, but because it anchors you in reality. A deeper reality, not just of suffering, but of meaning, of impermanence, of moments that will never come again. Marcus Aurelius once wrote, "You could leave life right now. Let that determine what you do, say, and think." That's not pessimism, it's perspective. It's awareness that sharpens your ability to appreciate the present. And when your brain starts adapting to that, when it begins to expect value, to seek it out, to focus on what's stable and nourishing, you become different. You carry yourself differently. You speak with less complaint, less comparison. You hold difficulty without collapsing. You begin to lead your emotions instead of following them. This doesn't mean you become blind to reality. On the contrary, you see it more clearly, but you also choose where to dwell. You can walk through the same street you always walk and notice something beautiful that was always there. A tree in bloom, a stranger's kindness, the quiet rhythm of your own breath. You start to realize you're not just a product of your environment, you're a product of your focus. So ask yourself, what am I rehearsing in my mind every day? What narrative am I repeating? Because every thought leaves a trace, every focus trains your future. And when you commit to gratitude, not as a mood, but as a practice, you begin to create a mind that can hold peace even in chaos. Optimism, not as naivety, but as strength. This is the power of a grateful mind, not to ignore the world, but to see it through a sharper, wiser lens, one that notices the light even in the shadow, one that gives you back your power to choose, not just how to feel, but how to think. 8. Gratitude redirects focus from want to worth. Most of us are trained, almost unconsciously, to want more, to scroll, to compare, to desire what we don't have and overlook what we do. It's baked into how the modern world works. You're constantly being told you need a better version of everything, a better body, a better lifestyle, more money, more recognition, more validation. And if you're not careful, you begin to believe that you're behind just because someone else appears ahead, that you're lacking just because someone else is flaunting abundance. But here's the trap. The more you focus on what you want, the more invisible what you already have becomes. You stop seeing the value in your current relationships, your current strengths, your current opportunities. You become numb to blessings because your eyes are fixated on what's missing. And over time, this hunger turns from motivation into misery. You start chasing, not growing, wanting, not appreciating, consuming, not creating. This is where gratitude becomes more than just a virtue. It becomes a redirection of attention, a daily mental reorientation. It shifts your gaze from what's absent to what's present, from what's flashy to what's essential, from external validation to internal alignment. It helps you recognize the worth of things, not just their novelty. When you practice gratitude, you're not ignoring your ambitions, you're grounding them. You're reminding yourself that value isn't measured by accumulation, but by awareness, that your life isn't enriched by having more, it's deepened by noticing more. You begin to see worth in simple moments, a quiet cup of coffee, a kind gesture, the strength it took to get through a hard day. And slowly, your perception shifts. You stop counting what you lack and start valuing what you've cultivated. The Stoics understood this well. Seneca wrote, "It is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more, that is poor." That sentence hits harder the more you read it, because you realize poverty is not always material. It can be emotional, spiritual, perceptual. When your focus is consumed by want, you become blind to worth, even if you have everything others only dream of. Gratitude cuts through that blindness. It reintroduces you to the life you already have. It pulls you out of the illusion that fulfillment lives in the future. And it brings you back to the truth that what truly matters is often right in front of you, but you've trained your eyes to look past it. And let's be clear, this isn't complacency. It's clarity. When you know what you already have, you become wiser in choosing what to pursue next. You don't just follow desire, you question it. You ask, does this align with my values? Does this reflect who I want to become? Gratitude doesn't stop ambition, it refines it. It ensures that what you're chasing is actually worth catching. You also become harder to manipulate. When your mind is focused on worth rather than want, advertisers lose power over you, peer pressure weakens, social comparison fades, because you've already established your inner baseline. You already know what matters to you, and that kind of grounded focus is rare. It's magnetic. It makes you more intentional, more peaceful, and more self-directed. So next time you feel like you're falling behind, or that everyone else is doing better, pause. Ask yourself, am I focused on what I want or what I already have that holds deep value? Then take a moment to name three things, just three, that you'd miss if they were gone. That exercise alone can shift your whole mood, your whole mindset. Because in the end, a meaningful life isn't built on endless craving. It's built on choosing where to place your attention, and when you consistently redirect your focus from want to worth, you begin to realize something powerful. Maybe you're not lacking. Maybe you've just been looking in the wrong direction. 9. Recognizing value creates abundance. Abundance isn't a number in your bank account. It's not how many followers you have or how many boxes you've checked on your life goals. Real abundance is perception. It's the ability to recognize value where others see nothing. It's the mental state that allows you to say, "What I have is enough, and within it, there is more than I ever realized." So many people live surrounded by gifts they can't see. A stable friendship, a healthy body, a mind that still dreams, a day without pain. But when the mind is trained to seek what's next, it forgets how to notice what already is. It becomes blind to richness, not because the richness is missing, but because the awareness is. You start telling yourself you're poor, not because you are, but because you've forgotten how to see. Gratitude sharpens that vision. It awakens your ability to recognize worth. And the moment you start to see value in your present, you feel richer, not in fantasy, but in reality, because what you focus on expands. If you look for lack, you'll find it everywhere. But if you train your mind to see what's already working, already strong, already beautiful, then suddenly life doesn't feel like a deficit. It feels like a foundation. The Stoics were masters of this perspective. Epictetus was born into slavery, stripped of privilege, power, and freedom. Yet he said, "Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants." His words weren't just philosophical, they were survival. He understood that value isn't something others give you. It's something you learn to perceive for yourself. And here's the paradox. When you recognize the value in what you already have, you become more creative, more generous, and more resourceful. That's how abundance multiplies, not through hoarding, but through understanding, not through wishing, but through witnessing. Because once you see how much you already carry, you stop operating from fear. You stop grasping. You stop believing the lie that you're not enough. Gratitude becomes the mindset that reprograms your internal economy. Instead of scarcity, always needing more, always measuring yourself against others, you live in appreciation. And appreciation is powerful. It breeds confidence. It expands capacity. It opens space for deeper connections, for more grounded ambition, for joy that doesn't depend on outcomes. Think of someone who walks into a room and makes everyone feel richer, not with money, but with presence. That person probably isn't the one complaining about what's missing. They're the one who sees the good in people, the one who brings out value by noticing it. And what they offer isn't loud, it's subtle, but it changes everything. Because recognizing value creates value. It doesn't just observe the good, it amplifies it. That's your power too. To choose where your eyes rest. To choose what you speak into existence. To practice daily the simple discipline of asking, "What here is worthy of appreciation?" The more you ask, the more you see. And the more you see, the more life opens. Not because it suddenly got better, but because you did. Because you finally learned to see. So if you feel empty, if you feel behind, pause. Not to acquire something new, but to recognize something old, something already within reach. Maybe it's your persistence, your kindness, the fact that you woke up today still trying, still caring, still capable of change. These are riches. And when you learn to treat them as such, you live in abundance, no matter your circumstances. 10. The grateful heart is the strongest armor. There's a quiet kind of strength that doesn't show itself through domination, loudness, or control, but through presence, through calm, through peace that isn't shaken by the chaos around it. That's what a grateful heart gives you. Not weakness masked as passivity, but resilience anchored in awareness. And in a world that constantly tries to pull you into fear, urgency, and insufficiency, this kind of heart becomes your greatest armor. Armor doesn't mean you're untouchable. It means you can be touched without breaking. It means you can feel the pain, acknowledge the loss, face the injustice, and still choose not to be consumed by it. That is what gratitude does. It gives you perspective strong enough to hold sorrow without letting it shatter your sense of meaning. Think of someone who has been through hardship, real hardship, not imagined suffering, but life-altering difficulty, and still manages to speak kindly, to smile with sincerity, to show up for others without bitterness. That kind of presence doesn't come from ignorance. It comes from the discipline of gratitude, from a mind trained to hold on to what remains instead of being defined by what was lost. The Stoics knew that external security is an illusion. You can't protect yourself from loss with money. You can't shield your soul with fame. Everything you can touch, own, or even love can be taken. But the one thing no one can ever take from you is the perspective you choose. And when you choose gratitude, you build a fortress inside. A fortress made not of stone, but of truth, of values, of meaning. Seneca said, "He is a wise man who does not grieve for the things which he has not, but rejoices for those which he has." That's not naivety, that's armor. Because a grateful heart is hard to corrupt. It resists envy, it resists despair, it resists the temptation to define itself by comparison. And when life hits, when plans fall apart or people disappoint you, that armor doesn't collapse. It absorbs the impact and reminds you of what still matters. It's not flashy, it doesn't scream, but it holds, it endures. And when others around you are spiraling, a grateful heart becomes a lighthouse. Not just for you, but for everyone near you. Because people are drawn to that steadiness, that silent conviction, that refusal to be pulled into negativity, even when negativity would be the easier path. And this armor is not inherited. It's built, slowly, daily, through small acts. Writing down what you're thankful for, pausing to savor a moment, saying thank you even when it feels forced. It's a process of reconditioning your nervous system to stay anchored, not in comfort, but in awareness, in appreciation, in that stubborn belief that life still holds value even when it doesn't go your way. Gratitude gives you spiritual leverage. It lets you stand your ground when the world shifts beneath your feet. It keeps you centered when nothing around you is, and that's why it's the strongest armor. Not because it protects you from pain, but because it gives pain a place within a larger picture. A picture filled not just with suffering, but with love, with lessons, with resilience. So if you want to be stronger, don't just train your body, train your heart. If you want to be untouchable, don't chase power, cultivate presence. If you want to endure, don't run from hardship, find something within it to be grateful for. Even if it's just the chance to prove to yourself that you're still standing. Because when the noise gets loud, when fear creeps in, when everything feels unstable, what protects you won't be your achievements. It will be your ability to say, even in the storm, there's still something here to honor, still something worth holding. That's a grateful heart, and that's the armor nothing can penetrate. Gratitude is not a passive feeling. It's not something you wait to experience when life finally aligns with your plans. It's a mindset, a practice, a discipline. And in the world we live in, where everything pushes us to want more, compare more, and rush faster. Choosing gratitude is nothing short of rebellion, a quiet rebellion, but a powerful one. The Stoics didn't teach gratitude as a feel-good exercise. They saw it as a core pillar of strength, because when you can recognize what's already in your hands, you stop chasing illusions, you stop living in deficit mode. You stop outsourcing your peace to a future that never arrives, and instead, you begin to live here, now, with depth, with clarity, with presence. That's the shift we need, from hunger to appreciation, from noise to awareness, from craving to creation. When you wake up tomorrow, don't ask life to be easier. Ask yourself to see more. Don't wait for everything to fall into place before you feel full. Choose to be full first, and let that fullness guide your next move. So here's the challenge. Today, name what you usually overlook. Sit with it. Feel it. Give it the attention it deserves. Maybe it's the roof over your head, the friend who checks in, the strength you've built quietly through years of silent effort. These are not small things. They are your foundation. See them, honor them, and let them steady you. Because the person who sees clearly lives wisely. The person who values deeply lives abundantly. And the person who practices gratitude consistently, not occasionally, builds a life that no storm can shake. If this episode gave you something to think about, something to shift, something to carry with you, then make it count. Share it. Save it. Let someone else hear what you just heard. And above all, remember, gratitude is not a finish line. It's the beginning of everything you've been searching for.